Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When the June unemployment rate was released on Friday, the headlines tended to say the situation is stagnant. Few jobs added, few jobs lost, and a steady unemployment rate of 8.2%. But widely overlooked was the unemployment rate for Black Americans, which jumped nearly a full percentage point to 14.4%. That follows a half-point jump in May, again compared to no change for the nation as a whole. And in New York City, shocking figures released last month showed half of all Black adults had no job in the last year, a situation that has grown worse even as the city's economy as a whole has rebounded much faster than the nation's. What's going on? What can be done? And why is President Obama skipping the NAACP convention this week, where this is expected to be a prime topic, while Mitt Romney plans to speak? Kai Wright is a contributor to The Nation magazine and editorial director of the Black-oriented site Color Lines. Kai, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Were you surprised to see the disparity in the June numbers?
I was not. It is sadly an old story, and I think you have to look at the numbers from a few perspectives. I mean, there's the sort of month-to-month fluctuations, and a lot of that is noise, honestly. You know, back in January, there was a dramatic drop in Black unemployment, and some of that is statistical noise, but the point is the trend line, and it has been, you know, from the beginning of the recession, anywhere between 13% and 16% unemployment amongst African Americans. And if you look in local places, you know, like that New York City stat, but I mean, if you look at some of these cities, Detroit, Milwaukee, Cleveland, places that I don't think Cleveland's on the list, but a lot of places that have 20-25% unemployment, depression level unemployment in Black communities. And that's been the case since 2007. So you'll see some month-to-month fluctuation on it, really, as people get back, come in and out of the job market. Remember, the unemployment numbers are about who's looking for work. So as people come in and out of the job market, you'll see fluctuations in it. But the big picture is that this is an old problem inside this recession, and frankly, an old problem historically, too, if you really start to look back.
Of course. And I was looking at your site, Color Lines, and I saw the article that I guess you were just referring to from last October that listed the top five cities for Black unemployment at what you characterized as depression levels. And people don't like to use that word, depression, but when you have Los Angeles at 20% Black unemployment, Milwaukee at 22%, Detroit at 25%, plus this New York figure at 50%, which isn't really measuring the same exact thing, but still, if you add up everybody who might be working but who isn't, it's 50% unemployment. Those are depression-era numbers.
Absolutely, and it had been for a while. You know, I mean, I think so. When you look at those cities, things to remember are, you know, in 2007, when the recession began, all of those cities are places that had double-digit Black unemployment in the first instance, right? That had 10, 12, 13%, numbers that nationally we consider wildly unacceptable, right? We're at an 8% unemployment. We consider that wildly unacceptable. And in 2007, those cities had double-digit Black unemployment already. You know, so there's a few things going on. One, in the most immediate crisis since 2007, there's a lot of evidence that the loss in public sector jobs is a particularly acute problem for African Americans. And then so the cutting of teachers and particularly teachers, but throughout state and local level government since 2007 has really particularly hurt Black folks, where both Black folks and women who those were good jobs for Black people. I should say that the wage disparity, the racial gap you see in wages that you see in the private sector, you don't see in those public sector jobs. So these were not only jobs that Black people had in huge numbers, but were relatively good jobs.
Yes. And the other sector,
the last 5 years,
the other sector to add to public sector employment is construction. And that's one of the reasons that some people call this the man session. You know, so many more males and females have lost their jobs in the last 4 years, partly because with the housing bubble bursting, the construction industry You know, the bottom has kind of fallen out of that, and a lot of African Americans were employed there too. So between construction and public sector jobs, Black America has been hit harder. There is a silver lining from what I've read to last month's percentage point jump in the Black unemployment rate, according to an article I saw on the Griot, and it said the unemployment rate rose not because there's a smaller share of Black Americans in the workforce, but because more were looking for work, therefore counted as unemployed, which would indicate that more Black Americans were encouraged enough to begin or to resume a search, if that article is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, we see this across, you know, with the overall unemployment numbers that, again, this is what I was talking about earlier, as the traditional unemployment number really does reflect who's in the labor force at the time, meaning they're looking for work. And, you know, and as we have conversations about the green shoots and the economy is going to recover and things are looking better, folks who have been out of work for a long time, and that's who, you know, regardless of race, who we're talking about for our unemployment crisis now, is this people who have been out of work for a long time.
Right.
Those folks say, oh, well, maybe I should start trying again. And they come back out. And I don't know, I guess I don't share the silver lining idea, because they come back out and they don't find work.
Yes, and so it's only a potential silver lining, but then not really when they don't find
the
work.
They stop working, and then the number goes down the next month, and we say, oh, things got better. And it's
That's really right. Just
because, you know, so you end up with this yo-yo effect that goes on and on. I think an important other part here, and you know, is, again, looking at the history. Let's keep in mind that going back to the 70s, you know, which is the earliest we were looking at this, like going back to 72, the Economic Policy Institute has crunched these numbers. Black unemployment has always been 2 to 2.5 times higher than white unemployment, just as like a matter of fact, just as a matter of system. It has always tracked 2 to 2.5 times higher than white unemployment.
And the persistence of that is said to be a mystery to people, because Blacks are statistically, you know, more educated, a higher percentage of the Black population, having college degrees now, for example, than in the 70s. And, of course, it's the era after the civil rights laws were passed.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has changed, but it suggests that some hasn't. And you know, that it suggests a structural problem. A lot of things have changed in terms of individual opportunity and what individuals can do with themselves. But the persistence of that number suggests that there's something structural at play and that there are structural things. So some of the things we've heard about in the course of this recession that I think, you know, we can debate what we're calling it now.
Mm-hmm.
But what has been a recession that I think probably go into play over the history of Black unemployment, things like the way HR departments weed out job applications, you know, so you have to have had a job to apply for a job. There's a lot of things that qualify for experience that should qualify for experience. It's very easy to get weeded out in the first crop if you don't already have a lot of opportunity. That's one thing we've heard about in this recession. I think it's probably been true for a long time for African Americans. Also, I mean, you can't ignore things like the criminal justice system. In particular, when we're talking about young Black men and their entry into the workforce, and the way you enter the workforce then impacts the entirety of your work life. And so young Black men often enter the workforce with a lot of petty charges in their criminal record because of the way in which the neighborhoods they live are policed, you know, for having a dime bag of marijuana, for getting in a shoving match in the subway, things that people in other neighborhoods wouldn't have a criminal record for. A lot of young Black men have. And then that makes it difficult to get entry-level jobs. And so there are structural things like that that I think that have been in play for 30, 40 years that at some point we have to think about.
Kai Wright from ColorLines.com and The Nation magazine, as we talk about the Black unemployment rate going up by almost a full point in the June monthly jobs report and some of the longer-term issues related to that. We can take your phone calls, 212-433-9692. Anybody want to tell us your own situation, how you're coping, what you think should be done at a policy level, if you think President Obama is being responsive enough to this particular part of the unemployment problem. We'll get more into the politics of it in a minute. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's go to Ed in Jamaica. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Hello?
Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing,
all right.
Brian? How you doing to your guests? Basically, I think, gentlemen, you're being a little disingenuous because you're dancing around one big fact that people don't want to talk about these days, and that's institutionalized prejudice. I mean, there was a study by the Pew Institute a few years back which dealt with job applicants and had white job applicants and African-American job applicants apply for the same job. They were entry-level positions, and the white applicants were given fictitious criminal backgrounds. And 9 times out of 10, they got the job before the African-American applicant did, even though they were equally qualified. I mean, unless you're willing to take into account the history of, for want of a better word, racism in this country and institutionalized racism that plays a big part, aside from the criminal justice system and the unfair incarceration, especially with Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, you can't ignore that, number one. Number two, this president has not represented his main constituency, in my opinion, adequately. I mean, how could he walk away from the NAACP conference and not address this fully? And I think that bears back to the same fact. Anytime this president tries to raise African-American issues, he's accused of reverse racism, and he catches a lot of flack. Mm. And until we really break down this barrier about race and about how it's viewed in this society, institutionalized and otherwise, we're never going to address the high rates of unemployment, which you yourselves have said have been historically throughout the African-American
right.
community.
So, Ed, one thing before we get a response from Kai. Does it mollify you at all with respect to the president that he is having Vice President Biden speak to the convention?
I appreciate that, but, I mean, you know, his main constituency that got him elected, like it or not, was African-American people. And I know African-American people personally that will support him from the cradle to the grave. And I think he gives very much disrespect to the African-American community by not himself directly speaking to this.
Ed, thank you for your call. Kai, want to address the prejudice issue and why you didn't raise it initially?
Well, you know what, Ed's right. I apologize if I sound like I was dancing around it. I think he's exactly right that that's a big part of the problem is dancing around the word race and racism. And he's right. There is significant research out there at this point to establish that there is a real bias against black job applicants in human resource departments. I think what I was trying to stress is that is beyond the level of individual prejudice that a human resource officer may have seeing a black person and say, no, I don't believe that person is qualified, that there are some structural things that add up to that as well that we need to address. But I agree. We have to talk about the fact that this is race is at the heart of this.
Now, I
do want to say this. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the kind of study that he cites seems to come out periodically, and there's just so much accumulated evidence now that, you know, people who have the same qualifications, because people do these empirical tests, even the one he referred to, which I had heard about before, where there was a little criminal record snuck into the fictitious white applicant's resume, and still they tended to be preferred. Another thing that I know you're familiar with is second-generation Jamaican immigrants and other West Indian immigrants and African immigrants, the second generation, who speak like Americans, so are perceived not as Jamaicans, not as Haitians, not as people from Nigeria, but as African Americans by employers, they tend to suffer more discrimination than their parents did. So things go in the opposite direction than you would anticipate because of, you know, prevailing perceptions of African Americans as opposed to immigrant black people. But go ahead.
Yeah, and I think I agree with all of that. I wanted to speak to the president for a minute. I have been amongst those who have been very critical of President Obama over the years for the way for his reluctance to explicitly name race as part of the problem. But I will say this, and we have a piece on the site today from Amara Jones, our economics writer, who makes a good case and has made a good case that laying this laid to the side, the president actually has a really
really aggressive jobs plan for African Americans, and that is his public sector jobs bill. And if implemented, would do a great deal to reverse the jobs problem in Black America. And I think, while I again have been critical, and I think rightly so, that he needs to name race, at the same time, I don't think he's gotten a fair shake for having a plan and for having a policy proposal that would work if we could get it through Congress.
And it's true, and he talks about this, that the jobs bill that he's been touting currently that he can't get through Congress is a lot of aid to state and local governments, because that's where a lot of the increase in unemployment, while the private sector is adding jobs, the increase in unemployment is taking place at the public sector, which is losing jobs. And if Black people are overrepresented in those jobs, then it certainly would address the community. Of course, the president could never come out and say that, and people will turn around and, I mean, could, and he gets criticized
well, he could,
for
but
not.
This is precisely the problem. So he got beat up for saying that, and he backed up off of it because the core argument, what's lying underneath our argument about public sector jobs, mm-hmm. You know, and if you hear a lot of the rhetoric that folks from folks who are bashing public sector workers, you know, you hear a lot of code stuff that sounds like lazy Black people. You know, they're lazy, they're greedy, they're criminal, they're a lot of the stuff that we have used to demonize African Americans in conversations about work going back generations are now being used to demonize public sector workers. Right. We heard the same thing back when we were having a debate about welfare policy. You hear a lot of the same kinds of stuff. Now, you know, in order to challenge that, you have to stand up and say, hey, wait, there seems to be something going on here. Why are we bashing this particular kind of worker? Mm-hmm. And that's what the president has been unwilling to do, and that's where I become critical.
We'll continue in a minute with Kai Wright from colorlines.com and The Nation, and take more of your phone calls, as well as do a little more presidential politics. We'll play a clip of Romney and Obama reacting to the jobs numbers on Friday, and also get a little taste of how the Obama folks are going after Romney now and these revelations that he has offshore bank accounts and even an offshore secret company of some kind in Bermuda, and raising the whiff of the potential that there is tax evasion there. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking about the persistent high Black unemployment rate and the 1 percentage point spike in the June jobs report, even as unemployment for other groups held steady at about 8.2%. It jumped from 13.5% to 14.5%, basically, for African Americans. And we're talking about it with Kai Wright, who was the editorial director of ColorLines.com and a contributor to The Nation magazine. David in Secaucus, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Yes, hi. I want to make 2 points. I hope you'll let me make both points. I think that you all are just really going around the edges of the problem. The 2 points I want to make are, one of it has to do with family structure. And this was delineated as far back as the Coleman Report back after the 60s riots. And it has to do with family structure. When you have, and I'm Black, and I've seen this in my own family, when you have over 70% of Black kids born out of wedlock, the real problem has to do with Black males who have no guidance from a male and no role model in the household. I'm not talking about mentors, all that is good, but you need a male in the household, and that's part of the problem. The second part of the real problem, and no one wants to address this, mm-hmm. The second part of the problem Milton Friedman talked about as far back as 1974, there needs to be competition in public education. Black folks, more than any other group, support vouchers, school vouchers, yet the Black leadership kowtowing to unions have never supported this, yet they all send their kids to the most exclusive private schools. So they're never touched by the madness that goes on in some city schools. And this is a big problem because we're not competitive educationally. There's still racism, but these are two major problems that no one addresses. Obama is a classic example. He sends his daughters to the most exclusive private schools, yet whenever there's a little bill in D.C. to give these kids vouchers, he blocks it.
David, thank you very much. Kai Wright, will you acknowledge either of those as, you know, parts of the complicated whole issue?
Well, you know, I don't see what family structure has to do with the availability of jobs in the jobs market. If getting folks married somehow created jobs, I think that'd be a simple solution for people all over the world looking for economic growth that they've been unable to achieve. So I don't know that, but I will say that to the degree that you care about marriage and you feel like it's important that folks have traditional two-parent families, there is a significant amount of research that says that job loss and economic stress leads to the dissolution of relationships, and that it is one of maybe the primary stressor and cause for divorce. So I think David may have it backwards. On the question of education, you know, I think there's, and I will walk gingerly into the complicated world of education reform. There's a lot to be said there. It's absolutely true that African Americans tend to be strong supporters of not only vouchers, but all kinds of things that try to empower parents in the education world and in the education marketplace, because they're the folks that are facing most critical needs, and those are the only solutions on the table. I personally don't believe that things that erode our commitment to a public education for everybody are the answer. But certainly, I can understand why a lot of Black parents would want something at their fingertips that would allow them to save their own kids. But all that said, you can educate people till you're blue in the face. You can job train people till you're blue in the face. If there are no jobs, and if the jobs that exist, Black people don't get hired for a whole when and again, we have research that shows same educational attainment, same, and in some cases, better educational attainment than the white candidates that they're competing against, and Black people don't get hired for the jobs. It suggests that the problem is not education, but something in the job market.
Bob in Westport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay.
I had a comment, an observation. I was worked for many years in the construction field. I'm retired now, but there are two statistics to me that seem to correlate, that go with each other. You got a high unemployment rate in Black youth, and it keeps on increasing. You have a immigration problem where illegal immigrant situation, the illegal immigrant community keeps rising also. As the one goes up, the illegal immigrants more in the country, the Black youth unemployment goes up. There's a direct relationship. It cannot be talked about because it's politically incorrect to talk about illegal immigration.
So, Kai, let me get your reaction to that. And this is something that Black leadership does not have seemed to take a skeptical stance about with respect to the president. But if the president, through his order enacting a version of the DREAM Act and allowing 800,000 or so currently out of status people to start looking for jobs, all of whom are under 30 and all they need is a high school degree to qualify and no criminal record, then does that put inordinate pressure on the young African-American workforce compared to other people? And is that not an issue worth talking about?
Well, to clarify on the DREAM Act, I believe they need a college degree or to be enrolled in the military to qualify.
I thought it was high school, but I will check
that. There's a lot of versions of the bill out there, so but I'm pretty sure that was the most recent. But that laid to the side.
The statistical relationship that the caller pointed out, I haven't seen any data that suggests that suggests those trend lines actually correlate in the way that he mentioned. I think that emotionally there is it's certainly in Black communities too, and in all communities around the country, a lot of concern about undocumented workers and whether or not they are stealing jobs from Americans of all races. But there's significant research that shows that they're taking jobs that they're not competing for the same jobs that young Black people or anybody are competing for. They're doing domestic work. They're doing itinerant farm labor. They're doing things that that just aren't part of the job market that Americans of any race are competing for.
So if you have to have a high school degree or a college degree, then that's not always going to be the case.
Well, so amongst the DREAM Act youth, then, you know, again, we're talking about 800,000 folks who either have to be in the military or have to have a college degree. Those are new people in the job market, yes, but there is not there just isn't data to support the emotional idea that these folks are stealing American jobs. What all of the data suggest is for immigration in general, globally and across time, has been that when you introduce young immigrant workers into your workforce, you grow your economy. That these are folks who are ambitious and entrepreneurial and will take a little and turn it into a lot and create economic activity that didn't exist before. And you see that in a lot of places. Even, you know, we did a story a while back. It was an interesting, you know, Alabama has a very strict new immigration enforcement bill based on the idea that immigrants were stealing jobs. We had a piece where a journalist went down to one of the core towns, one of the factory towns that had died off over the course of the years and had a huge influx of Central American immigrants. And it's now a boom town. Because they came in and they created opportunities and grew the economy, and now it's a booming place. So the data we have on immigration and how immigrants impact economies is actually the opposite of the way we emotionally respond to the issue so often.
Let me just get a quick take from you before we run out of time on the presidential politics of all of this, and my guest is Kai Wright from Colorlines.com and The Nation magazine. Of course, Obama and Romney are both trying to spin the jobs numbers. Here they are both from Friday.
We learned this morning that our businesses created 84,000 new jobs last month, and that overall means that businesses have created 4.4 million new jobs over the past 28 months, including 500,000 new manufacturing jobs. That's a step in the right direction. That's a step in the right direction.
We have seen the jobs report this morning, and it is another kick in the gut to middle-class families. It's consistent with what I've heard as I've gone across the country and met with families in their homes, in cafes and restaurants, and in break rooms. American families are struggling. There's a lot of misery in America today.
Now, following on that and the one-point spike in Black unemployment, while it remains steady for the nation as a whole, Mitt Romney will speak to the NAACP convention this week. President Obama will not. He's dispatching Vice President Biden. How does that look to Black America? How does that look to the rest of America?
I think it's time will tell. We'll see how it plays. I think it's a tough choice. I think a lot of folks will be bothered by it. And not just because of the 1% unemployment spike. I think, you know, people feel the pain, and that's something that, you know, the statistical change I don't think will register as much as this building narrative over the course of the last 4 years of folks feeling like the president has been unwilling to embrace the Black community and say race at a time when the community is in a great crisis. So we'll see how that plays out over the course of the campaign. Though I'll have to say, you know, let's be clear, President Obama has had unwavering and enormous support in African American communities, and it's hard to imagine that that is going to change. And that's just how it is. Interestingly, I think what will be interesting about the debate about the economy, as referenced in both of those clips you just played, is they're both right. Things have gotten better. Things are changing, you know, and the president is trying to prove a negative that things could have been a lot worse. But in this case, Mitt Romney's correct, too. There's a lot of pain still. It will be interesting to see how they both play that out.
Kai Wright, contributor to The Nation magazine and editorial director of ColorLines.com. Thanks a lot for coming on with us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We will stay on presidential politics tomorrow, by the way, with Nicholas Shaxson talking about his Vanity Fair article that is getting so much attention. It regards Mitt Romney's offshore financial dealings. The Obama campaign even raised the notion that maybe it implies some tax evasion, though they don't have any evidence to that effect, but demanding Romney's tax returns, past tax returns, more than he's released. So we will dig into this with the article, with the author of that Vanity Fair article on tomorrow's show. Coming up next, Daniel Smith, author of Monkey Mind, A Memoir of Anxiety. We'll hear how he has dealt with one of today's most common emotional problems and take calls about how you have too.